Tiffany is the Director of Outreach and Community Engagement at the Bronfenbrenner Center for Translational Research at Cornell University's College of Human Ecology. She serves as the Associate Director for Cornell's statewide cooperative extension system, and she directs the HIV risk reduction research and education projects at the Bronfenbrenner Center. She holds a PhD in city and regional planning, as well as a degree in nursing. So at this time, I'll turn it over to Jennifer.
Thanks, Christine, and thanks everyone for being here today. I'd like to acknowledge the great work of my co-authors, two of whom are here, Sarah Burnell and Mary Maley in the back. Wave your hands. I don't have any relationships to disclose here today. In today's discussion, we'll be talking about the Complementary Strengths Research Partnership, which has been going on since 2005. I'll also be talking a bit about the background research around program-level contexts and interventions, and then talking about the individual and program-level variables that we looked at in the Complementary Strengths Project. Then I'll wrap up with some findings and implications for research and practice. A little bit of background on the CSRP. We started out with a question. You know, sometimes you're given a research project that kind of goes out to the community. In this case, the question came from the community. And that was basically, does active program participation boost HIV risk reduction among youth? The context for that was a partnership between Cornell University, the New York State Department of Health AIDS Institute, and a very large number of community-based programs doing HIV risk reduction work with youth. And those programs were using increasingly a positive youth development approach. And the core of that approach is engagement, participation, voice, influence, youth at the center. The project that we launched based on that question included a pilot study of about 98 youth who were surveyed in 2006, an exploratory observational study that involved eight agencies in New York City and engaged about 330 youth during 2008-2009. And Sarah would be able to respond to questions about that engagement process and the retention work that was done in that. And then follow-up interviews also conducted by Sarah with 44 youth participants and 18 staff, some of whom were youth or had been youth participants in the agency. The aim of this study was to develop some measures that were really usable in the field, usable in day-to-day program practice, to look at the quality of youth participation, the level of activity and engagement in youth participation, and then also to assess and see if our intuition was correct that there were links between the quality of participation and sexual health practices among youth. The academic context, the kind of literature context for this work is, you know, there's this growing literature that says that settings that encourage youth engagement and agency are associated with adolescent risk reduction. And there's also a growing body of evidence that identifies the key elements necessary for quality youth programming. However, a lot of times the pieces aren't woven together, and more research is clearly needed about setting level characteristics. How can we explore them? How can we boost them? How can we know when they work? There are two major program level interventions that we've found out there in the literature for youth serving programs. One is the youth program quality intervention, which has been developed by the Weikert Center for Youth Program Quality and the Forum for Youth Investment. And its general process is to assess, generally using observational assessments and interviews, looking at the point of service where youth are engaged in programs, to use that data to do planning and to improve the interventions that are delivered in those programs. Another major, mostly utilized in mental health services for youth, intervention is availability, responsiveness, and continuity, ARC. It's put forward by the Children's Mental Health Services Research Center, and it builds on the organizational social context data. The commonality between these two major interventions is that they're data-driven, but they're also highly engaged. They're really working with people at the point of service and cycling that data back to people in order to engage them in program improvement and to actively plan changes. The Complementary Strengths Research Partnership had a number of different approaches that relate to that. We used mixed methods, survey, interview, data interpretation. Youth and program staff were members of a larger kind of decision-making body that worked with university researchers to develop and refine surveys and also to work on problem-solving and sustaining participation in the project. The observational study, which is the one for which I'll report most of the data, engaged 329 ethnically diverse participants in 8 agencies representing 18 after-school programs in New York City. About two-thirds of them, a little bit less than two-thirds, were female. About a little bit more than a third were male, and 1% were identified as transgender. 74% were heterosexual. 26% identified as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, or questioning. Only 3% were non-white Hispanic. The majority were, about 40% were African American, a like number were Hispanic American, and many were mixed. There was a smaller subset of participants who identified as Asian, Native American, and Pacific Islander. And there, at each wave, 2 and 3, there was a 91% retention rate. Some people came back for wave 3 who didn't participate in wave 2, so the overall retention rate was 93%. And that was something that I think was really driven by the participatory nature of the study, the give and take with youth and with staff at the programs in terms of how do you engage people in the first place and how do you keep youth coming back, even when they have potentially left the after-school program that was the site of the original baseline study. What we did as this study, this partnership evolved, is we validated a number of scales. The ones that are, I think, most salient here are the program participation scale, which really looks at engagement and activity levels in terms of program participation, and I'll say a bit more about that. We validated the scales. We tried to do that very rigorously. And then we worked to translate those scales so that they would be easy to use in day-to-day program work. So we have subsequent elements of the partnership that are really using these for program evaluation. And one of the major methods that we used throughout the project and in the current, the current version of it is youth-adult data interpretation. Bringing the data back, oftentimes presenting it graphically, oftentimes presenting the data that is harder to understand, harder to interpret, and just really working it. Youth, adults as partners. And one of the key agencies that were involved with Project Reach Youth in Brooklyn, and this is a photo from a recent data interpretation session there, has a career ladder approach so that youth may come in to, first engage at a sort of one-time event in the community, go on to do HIV 101, become peer counselors, become peer leaders, become senior counselors, staff members at the organization, and then assume, they get paid at many of these levels, but then they may apply for and assume full staff roles at the agency. So, the career ladder is a really key thing. And if you look at this, I don't know if you would be able to say this person's a youth, this person's a staff member, So that's sort of fun. Okay, a lot of these are sort of, too many words on the slide, right? But I wanted to give you the program level variables that we derive from the interviews with youth and staff at the agencies. Because these were really key elements that they saw as contributing to a setting that would enable youth to be actively engaged. program stability, you know, not a lot of staff turnover, an active welcome, people who greet you, people who know your name, staff stability, feedback opportunities, employment opportunities, career ladder, a youth council, some kind of structure that is accessible to youth to be able to have a formal voice in addition to informal voices in program direction, opportunities for civic engagement, and a high staff to youth ratio. So these were the components that kind of surfaced from the interviews that Sarah did. We also derived a number of program level variables from our quantitative data. One was program participation, the quality of it. And the scale that we developed for that has 20 items. It's reliable and valid as a complete scale. It also breaks into some kind of interesting subscales. One that looks at safety and support as experienced by youth in programs. Another that looks at opportunities for personal development. Will this contribute to my access to education, to my future career path, to my engaging my aspirations? Another around voice and influence, the informal voice, the formal ability to help with making programmatic decisions, and then finally opportunities for civic engagement. Other program level variables that we derived from the survey were family connectedness, school connectedness, ethnic identity, and for this we used Finney's multi-group ethnic identity measure. And it functioned in our data sort of like another connectedness measure, like school connectedness, family connectedness. It's really rather neat. Gender, and then the measures that are often used to zero in on participation in programs. Hours per week, how many hours per week do I as a youth spend at this place, and how long have I been involved? Okay, the time on task participation measures. We wanted to get, in addition to those, at the quality. Okay, and this I left up, you'll be able to access it on the web, but probably you can't read the significant associations there, so here it is in color. What we found was that HIV risk reduction was very highly correlated with program participation, with school connectedness, and with the multi-group ethnic identity measure. It was also quite highly correlated with family connectedness and, to some extent, with duration of involvement. Participation was, highly, in addition to HIV risk reduction, was correlated with family connectedness, school connectedness, ethnic identity, and number of hours per week engaged in activities of the organization. And so those are the places where I will zero in a bit. These, as you can see, were just bivariate correlations, but they helped to drive our multi-level, multivariate analysis. Here's where it got kind of exciting. Okay, what we found was, you know, it's like, yes, there is that strong correlation between program participation and HIV risk reduction and health promotion activities. What we found was that this was really guided by the sort of duration, the amount of time that youth had stayed engaged with a program. And what that says, you know, to me, and I'm not sure I'm articulating this exactly right, if it's a program that really engages me and I stay with it for a long time, I'm more apt to practice sexual health promotion in my life because I'm in this context where I'm engaged and it's a participative program. I may stay equally long, engaged equally long in a program that's less participative. That's, I'm not sure if we can, yeah. Is that showing up? Okay, that's down here. Oops, gotta go back. But it's not gonna boost my sexual health promotion as much as if it's a highly participative program. So that was a really kind of big setting level take-home message from my perspective. We also wanted to look across waves, and what this shows is that youth with participation scores, and this is looking at the sort of setting level participation scores, not my individual participation score. I may not be a very participative youth, right? I may be at this program, and I may just not feel like I want a lot of voice, right? However, if the sort of overall ambience of the program is participative, I'm more apt over time to practice more sexual health, HIV risk reduction behaviors. Okay. And the way this slide works, the solid line is where you saw an average program level participation score, one standard deviation above the mean. Okay. The dotted line is average, and it's pretty flat. Declines just a little bit. The one standard deviation below the mean for participation over time, HIV risk reduction and sexual health promotion practices decline a bit. So our emerging model is, you know, basically suggests that you need to look at program characteristics, setting level characteristics, as well as just individual level characteristics when you're looking at predictors of participation level. And that you need to look at the experience that youth have around participation if you're going to see what kind of outcomes, what kind of consequences their engagement in this after-school program might have. And what we're hoping for in terms of consequences are, you know, compassion, you know, civic engagement, all of these C's of positive youth development. But we're really also looking at healthy maturation, including sexual health and risk reduction. And we're also looking at, you know, that sense of agency and strategic thinking that often correlate with, oh, I'm really doing okay on time, I've got 5 minutes. We're going to have lots of time to discuss stuff. You know, that are often correlated with health and happiness, right? Okay. So if you go back to the experience of participation, yeah, you're going to want to look at intensity. So what kind of roles do I have? What can I do? How varied is my work with this organization? You know, the breadth, the duration, but also those key things that surfaced in our measure of program participation, personal development, voice influence, safety and support, and community engagement, all of these things fostered by the program. And then we can kind of look back at what kind of program characteristics foster these things, and do they work differently for youth with different individual characteristics? So that's kind of our emerging model. Now, there are lots of limitations to this. It was an observational study. It wasn't an intervention study. You know, we looked at 8 agencies, and we looked at 18 after-school programs hosted by those agencies. So a small number of sites, relatively small number of youth, 329. There were only 3 waves of survey data, and that means that you're kind of limited in what you can do in terms of analysis and looking at the kind of trajectories that you can project. And, you know, the programs varied a lot over those sites. So maybe, you know, maybe there's something else happening there that we didn't pick up on, but we think that there's some good implications to this. One is our data really kind of made our team believe that setting level factors influence risk reduction amongst adolescents. We really think that highly engaged program participation may help sustain adolescents' risk reduction and health promotion practices over time. And that leads us to say, you know, it's like a lot of our interventions are really just looking at individuals and changing individuals. That's really hard work. Sometimes it makes more sense, and it may be more efficient and more respectful of individuals to consider looking at context as well as individual factors. Okay. The other thing, you know, it's like it's really important if you're looking to intervene on program participation and the quality of program participation, it's important to be able to measure that easily and reliably, and we think that we came up with a measure for doing that. 20 items, youth checked, you know, over generations, many, many different iterations of that survey, and we think it's pretty good. it's important to design and test interventions that increase program level engagement to intervene with settings, not just with individuals. And we also think that after school and out of school time programs can provide one key setting for intervention. So a lot of activity going on there, a lot of incredible people working on that work. And we think that if it's possible to boost the quality of participation in those after school programs, it's possible to use them as a lever for boosting sexual health and overall health. I should point out that among the 18 programs that we worked with, some were sexual health specific, some were not. They were intergenerational connectedness. They were computer science, you know. So I want to thank our partner agencies, largely all in New York City. I want to thank the New York State Department of Health AIDS Institute, and I want to thank the New York City Department of Youth and Community Development. And I want to thank our funders. We were awarded an exploratory grant by the National Institute of Nursing Research, and also we've had two subsequent grants from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We don't represent their views. They may not endorse a word that I have said. Okay. For more information, you can email me, and then also the program participation scale and all of the documentation for it is available on the Bronfenbrenner website. It's also a kind of fun website to look at. And these references are there for, you know, when you go back on the web, because I know, you know, you're not going to be able to read them here. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much, Jennifer, and thank you to all our presenters. And it's wonderful to participate in this session, especially since the work I do in adolescent health, I focus on assets and not, you know, blaming the victim and blaming the individual for certain things that are happening to them. And so I think all of our presenters kind of carry that theme, too, that we have to look at the environment, we have to look at the services and the supports that we're providing to youth as they develop as sexual beings. And so at this time, I definitely want to open it up to questions from our audience members for any of our panelists today. Yeah, go ahead.
We even want to ask that on the survey because you might get back an answer you don't want to know for that exact reason that people who return surveys are going to be the ones who are going to say yes, I want to participate. And so we did present it to the school board. Part of we, like I said, we worked with this team of 10 parents and we didn't hide anything from them. They helped us analyze the data, they helped us put the report together, and they really felt strongly that that needed to be conveyed that that was the parent preference. That is the district's existing policy. And so the district did not want to change that policy anyway. We were hoping we would get something different back, but frankly, I think the chances of changing that policy were going to be slim no matter what. It's baby steps. And so we're hoping that as they roll out the program and that they see that it's successful and that parents are not upset about it, that maybe we can reconsider the active consent. And they also have been looking at some also, when we figured out that they were going to have to do active consent, we were trying to figure out some alternative ways to get active consent while we still reach the maximum number of students. So sending home those consent forms in the back-to-school packet that all parents get for all the health forms, then having other opportunities to do the active consent at, like, sports events, at, you know, PTA meetings, like, basically giving parents about 800 different ways that they can opt into the program. And so we're going to see how that goes. This is the first year they're doing it, and so we're going to follow up with them and find out if we need to do more work on that.
Let's see. Why don't we go? Go ahead.
Okay, I actually have a question. I want to follow up on the consent. Since you've looked at third through 12th grade, like, is it a way that you can get one consent for however many years you've involved in? I don't know if that's like, you know, there may be some other issues, but I'm wondering if you got some kind somebody is parent, whether they send them to the third grade or fourth grade, and this turned out to be like a every year, like add-on sessions based on your data, there's clearly issues that they want to later in middle school. Would that require like a new consent, or you can say, hey, like, if it's one consent, I'm asking, like, if at any time,
so
I don't know if that's a possibility.
That would be amazing. That's not what they're going to do. Okay. We were like, well, why don't you put it on the website? Why? I mean, I went kind of crazy and was like, okay, here's 50 ways you can draft a consent. But they really are trying to keep it, what I would say, some very traditional ways of doing active consent, which is, I mean, for this district, it's a big step forward to even do this type of programming. And so we're trying not to, like, push the boundaries
with them too much. And then the other question I have for you, in your sample, did you consider stratifying by age in looking at the boards?
So we did, but essentially the way, because it was such a big age group, there was such little ends in every year that it just made
Well, I was thinking like maybe like even cut in half, because I could imagine like the 10-year-olds who have faith, like, the partner probably wouldn't be supported because they probably go to jail. But, you know, like, I mean, seriously, like, they probably are here. But for the older kids, I wonder if that's where you would have found more support, like the older kids.
So when we looked at just 18 and 19-year-olds, they definitely had a lot more support, more marriage, more cohabitating.
Other questions? Yeah.
So my question is for Jennifer. I'm curious, were you able to provide the individual program with data about their own context? And were they able to, was there an opportunity for them to change or adapt, become more participatory? Was that well received, or were people annoyed to learn that they needed to change or could change?
People were pretty passionate about stuff. The way we constructed data interpretation sessions for the larger study, the 330 people study, was we would have a room a little bit smaller than this, do data posters on sort of pressing questions that were emerging from it, and then draw in youth adult teams from each of the programs. And so what they did was looked, and this was just aggregate data, but they looked at it and they kind of thought about how these aggregate findings across all the agencies might translate into their home agency. So there was a lot of discussion, for example, if my program is really good at engaging girls and your program is really good at engaging boys, as the youth in my program, I'd say, you do this really well, staff person, let's try that. So there was a lot of that kind of active program improvement. In terms of the disaggregated project-specific data, we got that to people in basically data books so that they could look at their own project in relation to the aggregate. But we didn't, do something that sort of lined up all of the programs, so that there'd be a lot of sort of internal comparison between all of the variables across all of the programs. But I'd say the reception was just, generally pretty, this is for us, and let's grapple with it. Do you have anything to add to that?
That or those that weren't passionate about it were angry. It was just information that they don't need.
Yeah,
other questions? I actually have a couple for our panelists. Monisha, it was a very interesting study, and your implications were helpful as well. I'm wondering if you have any additional ideas on how, or you and your research partners have talked about this at some point, about how to engage partners more and how to increase partner support. So you want to share any of those reflections with us?
Yeah, definitely. So I used to work, or I did a bunch of interviews at a WIC center, and we were interviewing teens who had healthy birth outcomes. And so a lot of times we're looking for resilience, and a lot of them have said, well, I'm still with my partner, or he was there with me throughout the pregnancy, things like that. And so ideally what we would like to see is that we could do educational sessions at social and health programs or even with OBs or at different clinics saying, ask these questions, see if they're getting the support, and if not from particularly the partner, where they can get other types of support.
That's great. That's great. On that note, too, I want to let you know that within the maternal and child health section, there's a new committee that is really focused on, you know, paternal support. And it's just starting. It's actually being co-chaired by a man and a woman. And they're very enthusiastic about it, and they're looking for people who are interested in partner support to be engaged. So if you want more information, I could help you find more information on that. There's also a committee other than the adolescent and young adult health committee that I co-chair, there's one on improving pregnancy outcomes as well. So for those of you in the room who are interested in healthy pregnancies, especially among youth, that could be another committee. Jenny, I had a question for you. Was there any discussion about surveying the youth and their preferences? Because it's interesting, I actually love the point in your presentation when you were talking about you knew that some of the youth were the ones responding to the parent questionnaire, which is not overly surprising. I've heard of that. So that's obviously, that implies to me that they wanted a voice in this as well. So can you tell us a little bit about any discussion that happened around that?
So, I mean, what we had initially wanted to, this, like I said, this process took 2 years, so believe me, we had like it was very much a choose your own adventure. And at first, we wanted to do a parent and a student survey. The district was not, that was not going to be happening. And so what we're doing as a follow-up is we've been doing, we're doing focus groups now that are actually parent and student focus groups in the same area, where we're talking about one of the ways that the health department wanted to kind of extend on the evidence-based programming is to offer a social media campaign that would let you know, texting your student learn about whatever in their sex ed class today for something to ask them at dinner. Mm-hmm. And so part of what we're doing is working with the youth to find out like what sort of media they would want us to do that through. But as part of that, we're asking them about what kind of content they would want included in their sexual health programming. However, there are, I mean, as you know, a limited number of programs that are considered evidence-based that are appropriate for this population. And so really it's sort of like, well, if we ask them what they want and they want something that's not included in an evidence-based program, are we going to be able to deliver on that? And the truth is, the health department only has 3 people who work on teen pregnancy prevention programs. They're not even close to be able to provide that kind of extra support. So I think that's a long-term goal, is to get that kind of feedback. And they do have teen ambassadors that they work with.
Okay.
But it's not something that we were able to do in this survey.
Understandably. And then, Jennifer, I was very glad to see that you brought up positive youth development, especially within this context. And it was interesting to watch your presentation because if, for those of you who also noticed this, you didn't talk a lot about HIV, actually. You talked a lot about programs and how, you know, the context or what the youth were engaged in and things like that, but not necessarily saying the words HIV all the time on every slide, which is great because I also going to take a positive youth development approach to my work. And I'm sure that there are people in the audience who don't necessarily, they're not as familiar with positive youth development approach to work with adolescent health. And so do you want to just give a quick overview, you know, a moment about what positive youth development is and why you take that approach to your work?
Yeah, and also, you know, how it ties specifically to HIV.
Right.
You know, I think, you know, my colleagues in the room will have to probably correct me on this, but positive youth development is really about looking at the supports and opportunities that youth experience in their social context. And, you know, okay, our center is named after Yuri Bronfenbrenner. That means we do stuff in terms of ecology, you know, social ecology. So we have a certain social ecology here at APHA, you know, a set of relationships that support and impel us. Families are a social ecology that are very proximate to young people. Schools are another, workplaces are another, after-school programs are another. Peer relationships, friends comprise another social ecology. And so it's really looking, you know, and where we as public health people have more leverage is around looking at the kind of institutional supports and opportunities that may or may not be available to them. And positive youth development is really using a strength, you know, seeing youth with eyes that look at their strengths and at their capabilities and at their potential, and then looking at the context in which they live to construct supports and opportunities that will enable them to fulfill those capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And how that ties back to HIV is, you know, it's like, you know, the youth that we worked with mostly in this study knew an awful lot about HIV, right? Knew what impact it was having on their families, on their schoolmates, on their communities, and so forth, and they wanted to do something about that, right? Mm-hmm. They knew what, you know, a lot about the potential impact on them and their bodies, and they wanted to have the supports and the opportunities to do something about that. So it wasn't at all like HIV was in the background in this study.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we actually, I think, came up with starting point on an innovative measure of, you know, that's really looking at health promotion around HIV, that's looking at access to testing, that's looking at utilization of condoms and other safer sexual strategies, that's looking at some of the, you know, more intensive risks that a lot of people and a lot of you face around transactional sex, around concurrent use of substances and having sex and
mm-hmm.
so forth. You know, we sort of packaged that into this HIV risk reduction and sexual health promotion measure. And what we found is that for once we had a measure that didn't discriminate and say older kids are just more at risk.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Even if they're doing everything that they can do, right, you know, they're just more at risk. And that didn't say, you know, gay, bisexual, and lesbian youth are more at risk because there's something in weighting the measure that kind of says, well, heterosexual youth are less at risk.
Mm-hmm.
So we found a measure that I think really kind of captured things.
Mm-hmm.
And that was with, you know, with a lot of input from you who understand this.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thank you so much for that explanation. And I think what we're finding in adolescent health is that it's so much more efficient, and I have to think that the youth feel like, you know, they appreciate this approach a little bit more, that rather than just focus on one particular problem or disease or something, we're looking at, all right, we know about that, and we see the data year after year about those health problems in the population, but rather how do we become more efficient about our public health programming and instead look at those things that are protective factors such as school connectedness, family connectedness, you know, all those things that you were talking about in your presentation. And by doing so, we help prevent a host of different, you know, problems, whether it be substance use, teen pregnancy, things like that. So it's really interesting work. And so, you know, thank you for that additional explanation. But any other final questions from our audience? I just want to thank our panelists again and thank all of you for attending.